on air or online, promote your wares, services, or events with us. Contact us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
Nah, we're just trying to win this dance.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astrotop.
We got the refugees, all stars, rubber dubbing in the club. Y Club Jean.
Look at here, look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another 1/2 hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me. I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My crew slang flow worldwide like a current. Whip to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the map.
Good afternoon. This is Marco on CITR 101.1 or 101.9. You're listening to AstroTalk. Well, what happened last week? I tried to give a story about former astronaut and U.S. Senator John Glenn because he apparently died. But then the news was mixed and they said he died a couple years ago, but he didn't die. But he actually passed away last Thursday. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about our first astronaut in space, or the first American in space, John Glenn. He was a former astronaut, U.S. Senator, died Thursday, December 8th at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center in Columbus. He served 4 terms as a senator and was one of NASA's original 7 Mercury astronauts. I guess Mercury was one of their first. There was Apollo, Mercury, I don't remember. But anyway, his flight on Friendship 7 on February 20th, 1962 showed the world that America was a serious contender in the space race, and later the leader in the space raid with the Soviet Union. It also made Glenn an instant hero. His mission of almost 9 days on the Space Shuttle Orbiter Discovery launched October 29th, 1998, when he was 77, so he went into space again, made him the oldest human to venture into space. On Discovery, he participated in a series of tests on the aging process. The aging population was one focus of his work as a U.S. senator. Glenn was described as humble, funny, and generous by Trevor Brown, dean of the John Glenn School of Public Affairs at Ohio State University, in a statement joined by the Glenn family. Even after leaving public life, he loved to meet with citizens, school children in particular. He thrilled to music and had a weakness for chocolate. Well, my weakness is ice cream. Whenever I have ice cream, it's a good day. So Glenn will always be remembered as the first American to orbit the Earth during those tentative, challenging, daring days when humans were just beginning to venture beyond the atmosphere that had nurtured them since the species began. While Glenn's flight on Friendship 7 was a glorious national triumph, problems arose that could have spelled disaster. The first was a failure of the automatic control system. Yes, there's a lot of things that happen when you go into space. For example, America found out and the world found out that there's radiation belts around the Earth. They didn't know that before going into space. So I'm going to continue with the article. A scheduled 30-minute test to determine whether Glenn could fly the capsule manually became a matter of life and death when the automatic system went out at the end of the first orbit. So Glenn recalled, "I went to manual control and continued in that mode during the second and third orbits and during reentry. The malfunction just forced me to prove very rapidly what had been planned over a longer period of time. Another problem seemed even more serious. Telemetry indicated the spacecraft's heat shield was loose. It seemed possible that Glenn and the spacecraft would be incinerated on reentry. Much of the world held its breath. I remember one of the first things that, I don't recall the person's name, but even before Glenn went into orbit, one, I guess we can call him an astronaut, they flew him high into space, and he jumped, and he parachuted to Earth. But what happened, there was a hole in his glove. So his, because the outer atmosphere was quite low in pressure, and inside his suit, it's just a regular atmosphere that we have here on Earth, his hand swelled up. It almost exploded. It swelled up really big. So there's a lot of little problems, just a little tiny hole in his glove. So there's a lot of problems that can be encountered in space. So this is just remembering John Glenn, who passed away. He was, doesn't say his age, but anyway. So there are pioneers in the space race, and John Glenn was one of them. And about the heat shield that they were worried about, Glenn left the retrorocket pack in place to study the heat shield during reentry. So says Glenn, it made for a very spectacular reentry from where I was sitting. Big chunks of the burning material came flying by the window. So he wasn't sure whether the flaming debris was a rocket pack or the heat shield breaking up. Fortunately, he told an interviewer, it was the rocket pack or I wouldn't be answering these questions. So there's a lot of little things that can go wrong. Imagine the millions of things they have to take into account when they go finally land on Mars with a human being. So anyway, this is a tribute to astronaut and former astronaut, former Senator John Glenn. And the space race back then was very exciting. There was a race between America and the Soviet Union. So it was very exciting. And I can recall when I was a little boy watching the men land on the moon. I took pictures. It was a thrilling thing that the whole world watched. So what's happening today, as I said, I had an interview in August at the LIGO Observatory in Washington, Washington State, Hanford, the Tri-Cities. But when I went to download the recordings, it wasn't there. So I don't know what happened. I thought I had it on. I thought it recorded. I didn't check it after, but there was nothing I could have done after anyway because I had finished the interview. And if it didn't record, it didn't record. So I'm sorry about that. I really wanted to get those LIGO recordings on because I went through the thing with Dr. Mike Landry. We put on space goggles, a nice plastic hat, and shoes, kind of mittens for our shoes, so we wouldn't contaminate anything. And we went around for about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then I interviewed somebody else who was doing work on neutron stars, and he was trying to detect the gravitational waves from the neutron stars. So what he was looking at, there was a little bump or a little dimple on a neutron star, and he said that could warp the space tram around the neutron star and cause a gravitational wave. So I'm sorry I didn't get that. I was looking forward to it, but anyway, we're moving on now. I'll bring the recording to where I bought the recorder, and we'll see if they can magically find it. I couldn't find it. Anyway, so I'm going to do a couple of other. I was looking at the night sky, and it's beautiful at night, but it's hard to pull out a telescope when it's minus 10. Don't want to go outside with my telescope. And plus, what happens with telescopes is that this is what I think that happens is, for example, your optics, either inside your house, which is maybe 70, 75 degrees, and then you bring your telescope out and it's minus 10. So you have to give it time for the optics to acclimate to the colder outside temperature. So I don't want to stand outside 10, 15, 20 minutes when it's that cold. So I hopefully one day when it gets a bit warmer, I will take out the telescope because the night sky in the winter is quite beautiful. Anyway, let's go on to another interesting topic. So today is December 15th, And are there any Rogue One fans out there? Well, there is an article from NASA, NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, dated December 15th, 2016, which is today. And the date, or the title is, Are Planets Like Those in Star Wars Rogue One Really Out There? NASA Plans to Find Out. So there's a picture under it, and there's a picture of stormtroopers in their white Darth Vader looking helmets and their white armor and their blasters. So stormtroopers in the new Star Wars film Rogue One wade through the water on an alien ocean world. NASA scientists believe ocean worlds exist in our own galaxy along with many other environments. And the credit is from Disney Lucasfilm Limited trademark. So I will read the article. Again, the title is, Are Planets Like Those in Star Wars Rogue One Really Out There? NASA Plans to Find Out. I wonder how it plans, let me speculate. I wonder how it plans to find out, because we have only so far sent a manned mission out to the moon, and we have the Voyager spacecraft. It is one of them. Voyager 1 is now outside of our solar system, but the next nearest star is 4.3 light years away. So how can we plan to find out if there are planets out there like Rogue One? Well, we have to look at their light somehow. We can't send probes out there. So wouldn't it be cool if we could send a probe? Wouldn't that be amazing? But anyway, I'm going to start to read the article. In the Star Wars universe, ice, ocean, and desert planets burst from the darkness as your ship drops out of light speed. But these worlds might be more than just science fiction. Some of the planets discovered around stars in our own galaxies could be very similar to arid Tatooine, watery Scarif, and even frozen Hoth, according to NASA scientists. So Star Wars is another revolutionary movie in the 70s. A lot of cool stuff came out of that. Still very popular today with the kids and with adults. Sifting through data on the more than 3,400 confirmed alien worlds, scientists apply sophisticated computer modeling techniques to tease out the colors, light, sunrise, and sunsets we might encounter if we could pay them a visit. Some of these distant worlds are even stranger than those that populate the latest Star Wars film, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And others are eerily like the science or the fictional planets from a galaxy far, far away. Now, below that, there's a picture of Luke, if you can remember that, in the first Star Wars movie. Astronomers have found planets with double sunsets like Tatooine in our galaxy. So there is Luke. He's standing in his close to his home, and he's watching two sunsets. And as you can recall, it gets so cold outside when those two sunset that they have to lock themselves inside. So there's Luke looking at a double sunset. And I don't know if anybody's seen that movie, but I'm sure many people have. Okay, now we're moving on from the capture, from the picture, and it says planets with double suns. And now they're talking about Tatooine, a real planet in our galaxy, reminded scientists so much of Luke Skywalker's home planet, they named it Tatooine. Officially called Kepler-16b, the Saturn-sized planet is about 200 light-years away in the constellation Cygnus. The reality of its two suns was so startling, George Lucas himself agreed to the astronomer's nickname for the planet. So imagine if we could, like, imagine a planet is 200 light years away, and we can say, okay, let's go there. It might take us a couple of days, but wouldn't that be cool? Now we can travel around the world. Hopefully one day we can travel around our galaxy. Wouldn't that be cool? Now, our soul says, Lawrence Doyle, an astrophysicist with the Search for Extra Intelligence Institute and the director of the Institute for the Metaphysics of Physics, who discovered the planet using NASA's Kepler Space Telescope. And quote, this was the first honest-to-goodness real planetary system where you would see the double sunset as two suns. Now, hang on. There's a bunch of pictures here, so I'm going to go to the next one. Now it has another picture of the gas giant Kepler-16b, or Kepler-16-16b, Kepler-16b, nicknamed Tatooine, orbits a pair of stars. One star is a small red dwarf. The other star is a larger K dwarf. I don't know what a K is, what a K star is. I know what a red dwarf is, but a K dwarf, I'm not sure. A person on Kepler-16b would have two shadows. In a storm, two rainbows would appear. Wouldn't that be cool? Each sunset would be unique because the stars are always changing their configuration. Building a new sundial would require calculus. Astronomers have discovered that about half the stars in our Milky Way are pairs. I thought it was about 65% of stars are 2, 3, or 4. Oh, half are pairs. So some are 3-star systems, some are 4-star systems, some are 5-star systems. There's even 6 or 7-star systems. So definitely more than half of the stars in the universe are multi-star systems. Our sun, and with one star, is a not an anomaly, but a minority. Okay, astronomers have discovered that about half the stars in our Milky Way galaxy are pairs rather than single stars like our sun. So while Kepler-16b, aka, also known as Tatooine, is probably too cold and gaseous to be home to life, remember, it is a Saturn-like planet or a hopeful desert farm boy, which is Luke Skywalker, it's a good bet that there might be habitable Tatooine twins out there somewhere. Now, there is another photo, and here is someone called Jakku, J-A-K-K-U. It's a planet. Jakku is a desert planet in Star Wars. There's a lady sitting there with some kind of automated machine there. The Force Awakens is populated with scavengers and creatures. Astronomers think that our galaxy also has many desert worlds that may be habitable. Now they're talking about desert worlds. So they're talking about Jakku, which is the planet that's shown here, J-A-K-K-U, and another planet called Jedha, J-E-D-H-A. Okay, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to go for a break. And after I go for my break, I'll come back and I'll talk about this interesting thing that I'm seeing. And let's see if I can find some ads I can put on. There we go. They configure these things so differently all the time that I'm at a loss sometimes of what to do. So anyway, thank you for listening. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
16 January 2017 issue of Discorder magazine is out now. We managed to record CITR student executive president Shay McConkie's first glimpse at the meat issue.
That's funny.
Open one up yourself to read interviews with Walgreen, poet Adele Barclay, Jakin, Kim Wardle, Dad Thighs, and a guide for playing shows in America, amongst other goodies. Plus, live show reviews of The Body, Hannah Epperson, and album reviews of Monomyth, Daniel Terrence Robertson, and more. Thanks to this issue's advertisers, whom we love dearly, Live Van, Geist, Steam Whistle, The Rickshaw Theater, Timber Concerts, The Rio Theater, Mint Records, Nightwood Editions, Audiopile Records, The Astoria Vinyl Records, The Wise Hall, and Jazz Records. Grab a copy around town or read the issue online at discorder.ca. Maybe our best issue ever.
Most likely. I would say like high chance of best edition ever. Nobody told me did it on my own.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only.
That's it. Pack it up.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101 with Marco. So that was Sarah, one of our former workers here, and everybody eventually moves on, so we miss Sarah. She was great. Anyway, now we're getting back to this article about, are there worlds like the world Tatooine that was on Star Wars, the first movie, or Star Wars planet called Jakku that's in Rogue One? Well, let's read on. There was a planet called Kepler-16b located 200 light years away. It was so similar, they thought, to Tatooine because it has two moons that actually set together, so you can see two sunsets, two moons, sunsets. Yes, two suns going down at once. So they nicknamed it Tatooine. One of the stars is a red dwarf star. The other is a larger K dwarf. I'll have to look up. I should have looked it up in the break, but I didn't. Okay, I had my chance. So now we're going to look at the desert worlds called Jakku, J-A-K-K-U, and Jeddah, which are on the Star Wars movies, the newest Star Wars, I guess, Rogue One. So the chapter starts Jakku, Jeddah. George Lucas has a fondness for desert planets, and at least one NASA scientist thinks he's on the right track. So that's right. Tatooine was a desert planet. Remember when we saw Luke? He was... And a desert, I guess, at nighttime it gets so cold. But anyway, Luke and them had to shut down everything and go inside. They had to lock themselves indoors. And there was all kinds of strange creatures outside. They had to stay inside at nighttime. So George Lucas has a fondness for desert planets. And at least one NASA scientist thinks he's on the right track. So says Sean Domogal Goldman, an astrobiologist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, end quote. Desert planets are possible. We have one right here in our solar system in Mars. We think desert planets elsewhere could be even more habitable than Mars is. Last night or the other night, I was looking at a space show about they were doing a test on Goddard Space Flight Center. They're going to fly a capsule up to a comet or an asteroid and land on it, and then they're going to shoot harpoons into the ground. So what the scientists were doing at Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, they were shooting harpoons in the ground, testing it, because what happens when they have to pretest it, when this spacecraft goes up to the asteroid and lands on it, they have a couple of times, and if they do something wrong, it won't work. So what they were doing, they were showing an astronaut who was testing his probe. He shoot the probe into the ground, and what happened is he wanted to shoot it at all angles, because if something does go wrong, they want to find it out on Earth while they're testing. So what happened, sometimes the probe, if it's not shot at the right angle or straight down, or if the surface is too hard or something goes wrong, the probe just glances off and it doesn't go inside the surface of the asteroid. So what happens if they want to get their spacecraft landed on the probe, on the asteroid or the comet, they'll shoot their probe down into the ground. They want the probe to go down. They're going to dig up some of the material inside, and they're going to have that fly back to Earth. So they're going to actually retrieve a sample of an asteroid or a comet. So they want everything to go right. So they were testing that. And what happened is they showed a picture of a comet or an asteroid as it comes towards Earth. The sun heats it and it heats all of the ice on the surface. So what's left on the surface is a rocky material. And inside there is the ice and all. It's like a dirty snowball, ammonia with ice. And they want to retrieve that. That is stuff that formed 4.5 billion years ago when our solar system formed. So they want to retrieve that. Stuff that's pristine like that, it's like gold, they want to examine it. So what they want to do, they want to get the probe when it's shot. They want it to go down and actually pierce through the surface of the comet or the asteroid and go inside. It's going to dig up and collect some of the material, and somehow they'll shoot the stuff back to Earth. So that'll be cool. Okay, so now we're talking about Sean Domogal Goldman, an astrobiologist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. He says, and quote, desert planets are possible. We have one right here in our solar system in Mars. We think desert planets elsewhere could be even more habitable than Mars is. Sean Domogal Goldman likes Lucas's proliferation of arid worlds because he believes it might reflect the galaxy we live in. So says Professor Domogal Goldman, and quote, The recurring theme of desert worlds in Star Wars is really interesting because there is some research that shows that these would be likely habitable worlds to find. So he is a climate scientist. So wouldn't that be cool if people could actually live on desert worlds? Desert worlds are not only a very real possibility, but they are probably very common, he said. They could be hot like Tatooine and Jakku, or cold like Mars and Jedha in Rogue One. So Jedha is another planet in Rogue One. It's spelled J-E-D-H-A. So says the doctor, Sean Dumigal-Goldman, and quote, the lack of water on a desert planet might be what makes it more habitable. Water amplifies changes to climates and can cause planets to end up being really hot like Venus or really cold like Europa. Isn't that cool that we are here on a planet, planet Earth, and so in the so-called, what scientists would call, the Goldilocks zone. We are in a Goldilocks zone. We're orbiting at a place where water can be liquid. Water in our solar system, on our planet, is often ice, or sometimes it goes into steam. So anyway, we're in a habitable orbit of our solar system. We are very lucky. Imagine a lot of planets are not in an orbitable, in a Goldilocks zone where it's life is possible. But who knows where life could be possible. Now there is another photo. It says Enceladus is an icy world, much like Hoth. Remember the ice world Hoth? That's in the second Star Wars movie. Again, it was so cold, people have to close the doors at night and lock them inside. So Enceladus is an icy world, much like Hoth, except that it might have an ocean under its frozen crust. Astronomers believe this moon of Saturn may be a good candidate for having extraterrestrial life beneath its surface. Now we're going to talk, we just talked about desert world, now we're going to talk about ice planets. Isn't it so cool how we can talk about science fiction? Because a lot of these things that appear on the movies are scientists consult. So I think, what's that famous scientist that died? The little blue dot. But anyway, he consulted on one of the movies. Now we're going to talk about ice planets and the ice planet Hoth. There is a world named Hoth in our galaxy, an icy super Earth discovered in 2006. It reminded scientists so much of the frozen rebel base. They unofficially nicknamed it after the planet that appears in The Empire Strikes Back. The planet's scientific designation is Big O, Big G, Big L, Big E, 2005, Big B, Big L, Big D, 390, Big L. After the optical gravitational lensing experience, Ogle that found it. Our galaxy's Hoth is too cold to support life as we know it. But it didn't say where this Hoth is. But life may evolve under the ice of a different world or a moon in our solar system. On Earth, it's been found inside volcanoes, deep ocean trenches, even the frozen soil of Antarctica. So in the coldest and the hottest spots in our planet, there have been life that's been found. NASA is currently designing a Europa mission to look for life under the crust of Jupiter's icy moon Europa. If they found that, I would explode. And Saturn's moon Enceladus also contains an underground ocean that could harbor alien life. Now, there is another photo from the Star Wars world. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi's ship lands on the ocean world of Kamino. That's K-A-M-I-N-O in Star Wars Attack of the Clones. In our galaxy, Kepler-22-B could be a super Earth with a super ocean. Now, isn't that cool? Now we talked about desert worlds. We talked about ice worlds. Now we're going to talk about ocean worlds. I'm going to talk about Kamino, K-A-M-I-N-O, and Scarif, Scarif, S-C-A-R-I-F. For the scientists who characterize exoplanets, the most important planet to study is Earth, the only known planet with life. And life on Earth began in the ocean. So says astrobiologist Nancy Klang, K-L-A-N-G, a research scientist at NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. And quote, we need Earth climate science to help us understand planetary habitability and the potential diversity of life on exoplanets. Nancy Klang is an astrobiologist, and her job is to model the kind of plant life that might exist on planet around other stars, also known as exoplanets. We haven't confirmed the existence of ocean worlds like the perpetually rainy Camino in Attack of the Clones, or worlds with oceans like the beachy Scarif from Rogue One. But we have found frozen ocean worlds in our solar system, in the moons Europa and Enceladus. So I believe Europa contains, scientists believe, more water than our Earth contains. We may even be able to glimpse an ocean on an exoplanet in the not-so-distant future. So says Victoria Meadows, a professor at the University of Washington and the director of the NASA Astrobiology Institute's Virtual Planetary Laboratory, and quote, ocean glint can be detected over large distances. Such a glint was first observed reflecting from the liquid methane seas on Titan, the largest moon on Saturn. So remember, there are lots of different kinds of liquid worlds. So, for example, Titan has liquid methane. It has seas and lakes. So now another picture shows the Millennium Falcon cruises over the lush forest planet Takodana in The Force Awakens. Unlike the green worlds of Star Wars, scientists believe that plant life in our galaxy could come in many colors. Now, wouldn't that be cool? Now we're going to talk about forest worlds. So there's Endor, the planet moon Endor in The Return of the Jedi, and in the new Rogue One, Takodana, so Takodana. Both the forest moon Endor from The Return of the Jedi and Takodana, the home of Han Solo's favorite cantina in The Force Awakens, are green like our home planet. But astrobiologists think that planet life on other worlds could be red, black, or even rainbow-colored. Now, that would be nice. A few months ago, astronomers from the European Southern Observatory announced the discovery of Proxima Centauri B, a planet only four light-years from Earth, which orbits a tiny red star. So remember, the Proxima Centauri system has three stars. It's a triple star system. It's 4.3 light-years from Earth. So says Professor Meadows, Victoria Meadows, the professor at the University of Washington, and quote, the star color would be peachy to the human eye, and the planet would appear dark purple to light purple, looking at it from a spacecraft. From the surface of Proxima B, the sky would appear to be periwinkle. So periwinkle is a blue. Now there's another picture, and it says light and color would look different on a planet orbiting a tiny red star, like this artist's impression of Proxima B. So they think it could look purplish. The Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone is the nearest exoplanet to our sun. So continue on with the article. The light from a red star, also known as an M dwarf. So we know there's a red dwarf, a K dwarf, and an M dwarf. I'll have to do a show on that. I have to talk about these dwarf stars. Okay, so the light from a red star, also known as an M dwarf, is dim and mostly in the infrared spectrum, as opposed to the visible spectrum we see with our sun. The planet also doesn't have sunrises or sunset like Earth. One side always faces its sun. Now, isn't that strange? Our Earth is then unique compared to other systems. So says Klang, the professor we talked about earlier, and quote, if you have photosynthetic organisms, they would always get fixed amount of light all the time. It would be a permanent sunset around the planet. You would see a gradation of color, just as seaweed changes color from green to dark brown as you dive deeper into the ocean. Planets on a red dwarf planet may brilliantly change color from the day side to the night side, and that could mean rainbow plant life. So isn't that cool? If we have studied all these other planets, we can find all kinds of different planets, whether they're ice, water worlds, whether they're deserts, and many stars, different colors of the plant life. That's incredible. So now there's another picture of Star Wars is driven by beings from any planets trying to get along. NASA scientists are looking for life on a planet other than Earth and believe that the next decade might bring breakthroughs. I guess there's that little droid. It's called BB-8. I don't know if this is this latest Star Wars movie or the one before. So now we're going to look at inhabited worlds, just about any Star Wars planet. In the Star Wars universe, Lucas and company envision scores of worlds bustling with intelligent beings. In our galaxy, we know of only such worlds so far, Earth. But NASA exoplanet scientists think we have a fighting chance of finding life beyond our own solar system. The next few years, we'll see the launch of a new generation of spacecraft to search for planets around other stars. The Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite Test, so TESS, so T stands for Transiting, E Exoplanet, S Survey, S Satellite, and NASA's James Webb Telescope will attempt to determine what's in the atmosphere of other planets. Then, in the next decade, the Wide Field Infrared Survey Telescope, WFIRST, which I interviewed a scientist on that before, will bring us images of exoplanet around sun-like stars. That's one step closer to finding life. So there's some lot of exciting things happen with NASA. So says Doug Hudgens, NASA's program scientist for exoplanet exploration. This is what he says of the Star Wars film's enduring popularity. And quote, "The idea of life on other planet resonates with people on a very personal level. They portray this image of a universe that is teeming with life. We are at our heart explorers. We want to know what's out there. Through the imaginations." Hang on, some little thing flicked up onto the screen and it blocked my sight. Good. Through the imaging of George Lucas, or through the imaginings of George Lucas and Gene Roddenberry, we get to feel for a bit of time like we can really go out and explore the stars. So this would be a really interesting topic, and I just covered it. Isn't that amazing? We're talking about all kinds of worlds out there. How can we get to them, though? The next, this world that was 4.3 light years away, this Earth-sized like planet, is in the Proxima Centauri system. It goes around Proxima Centauri B, a star, one of the three stars in that system. And the, don't think they called it, they just called the planet Proxima B. So what happens is one side perpetually faces its sun, so its star. So there are no sun, star, or there's no sunsets. I guess the other side of the world is perpetually in dark then. And scientists say the star color would be peachy to the human eye, and the planet would appear dark purple to light purple, looking at it from a spacecraft. Now that would be cool. So today, what we've done through the imaginings of George Lucas, this was an interesting article. This is dated December 15th, 2016. You can find it on www.nasa.gov. You go to their homepage, and it's one of the first stories there. And the story is, "Are planets like those in Star Wars Rogue One really out there? NASA plans to find out." And it shows stormtroopers in the new Star Wars film Rogue One wade through the water of an alien ocean world. And the caption says, "NASA scientists believe ocean worlds exist in our own galaxy, along with many other environments." So today we looked at a lot of different types of planets that could exist out there. And the sad thing for us now is there are the satellite James Webb Telescope. There are other satellites going out into outer space, and they could scientifically confirm the existence of different types of planets. And I guess they get this through the light that is sent to us from those planets and from those stars. But these planets and stars are, for example, Proxima Centauri B. It is 4.3 light years from Earth. Now, the Voyager spacecraft, just to get to the outside of our galaxy, the outside of our solar system, that's not very far, really. If you look at it in galactic terms or in terms of the whole universe, it took about 30 to 35 years for the spacecraft just to get to the edge of our solar system. So the propulsion systems we possess now, the technology we possess, and the know-how, getting to the closest star, 4.3 light years away. Maybe we can do that in the future. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen in the near future, because even going to Mars is 15, 20 years away. So this will be exciting for those younger people who will be born, and who 50 or 100 years from now, who knows what technology could exist. So today we looked at a lot of different planets, and we also looked at John Glenn. So isn't that a fitting way to close up the show with John Glenn? John Glenn was the first American in 1962, and quite a few things went wrong, and they thought he could have perished in that space flight. But anyway, what happens in these actual, when you do go somewhere, like as Apollo 13, there was a malfunction and something happened. So scientists are trying to anticipate everything that could go wrong. And when they do go to Mars, it could be 2030, it's possible that a spacecraft with humans aboard could fly to Mars, could orbit Mars, but not land on Mars. Now, wouldn't that be a pity for somebody to fly all the way to Mars? But that would be very exciting. It would take about 6 months. When I actually started reading this, they figured that it could take a year and a half or so, or 16 months to get there. Now they think maybe it's 6 months. But remember, there's certain launch windows. So Mars is, there's certain launch times where Mars is closest to us. So when it's farther, it would take a lot longer to get there. So we would have to go there and come back during, inside that launch window. So a lot of exciting things for the future. I mean, that's one of the great things about astronomy, that a lot of the things, for example, Galileo in the 1600s, when he first set his telescope on the planet Saturn and Jupiter, and he saw all those other moons and all these amazing things, and he was limited by technology. And I guess we are too, if you consider that in the future, maybe even 5 years from now, let's say 10, 20 years from now, the technology will just be so much different and so much more advanced that we could probably do a lot more things. Anyway, thank you for listening. I thought this was an interesting show. So we talked about different planets in our solar system and the planets in our galaxy. And a lot of these planets, the imagination is spurred on from the Star Wars movie. So the Star Wars Rogue One movie has a lot of new interesting planets, whether they are desert worlds, ocean worlds, or whatever they are. So we talked about that today. So let's see what else are there. Sorry, there's planets with double suns, planets that are desert world, ice planets, ocean worlds, forest worlds, and what else? Inhabited worlds. So hopefully we can run into those one day, or creatures from those places. Anyway, this is Marco. Thank you for listening. You were listening to CITR 101.1 AstroTalk.
Like the food on the cross, with your careless mistakes.